mean, if you look around all the different corporate sites now, and there has been obviously a huge evolution from 2000 all the way up to now, what do you think characterises the best sites? What are the things that, when you look at, you think, yes, they've really got it right?
I think the thing that I often make these judgments with a professional eye, but not trying to forget about the way that I simply react when I engage with, whether it's I'm trying to buy something online, or I'm trying to take part in a community, or I'm trying to find out information, you know, to make a, whether it's a purchasing decision or investment decision, these kind of things that I just do, forget what job I do, how do I react as a human? Mm. And I think there's definitely stages of the way that people go through that. So you could say that, you know, there'd be a school of thought that says almost like thoroughness, everything's there that you could want it. But then you go, well, that's great and very worthy, but is it easily findable, searchable, updatable, accurate, and useful? So then I think there's this big pull through the recent years, which is as we've seen a you know, global economy shaken to its core in many respects by the you know, the trust issue around big companies, and pretty dominated by trust issues around financial services, you know, in terms of the American crisis and the UK here, and pretty much mirrored everywhere in the world. And, you know, within that, what's the role of insurance companies within that? So I think there's been a huge drive as people began to understand that, you know, and a long way to go if you read the Edelman Trust Barometer, you know, published a couple of months ago, about how ordinary people still view, you know, banks and insurance companies compared to governments and all other kind of organisations or institutions that they trust. But I think big financial services companies have understood that transparency is probably one of those things that can help them in this. So it's about, as I often call it, in when I was talking about release of content into the wild. Mm. You know, content that companies know they have,
yep,
but don't publish externally, but will share internally, and actually having the courage and reassurance to actually say, we can publish it and make it findable and talk about it. So one of the simple things that we did years ago was actually make all our companies house regulatory returns available on the web in PDF. Because, that you know, companies house would give them to anyone who wanted them if they could make that. And it was just about saying to people, no, we, you know, they're here and we will provide them, and we'll tell you, you know, every year they'll be published at this date. If you want to read a 128-page, you know, thing on this, here it is. And obviously there is a certain amount of cost saving that's done that, because the old way of doing that was to have very, you know, heavily managed printed bound copies that would then be posted out to analysts everywhere like this. And so that began to trigger things. And, you know, at Aviva, we were on a journey to do some of that. We relaunched our investor centre in 2008. And one of the things we did like that was to take that transparency message further about why we felt people should invest with Aviva. And the other side of it is why they should stay investors with Aviva, you know, when there would be all these kind of contributing factors that might make them worry. And I think that was trying to, in some respects, you know, from a very financial, corporate, financial reporting dimension, lift the bonnet on the company and try and make people understand what it is operationally we do and why we believe we're successful and how that then translates into, you know, capital financial return for investors and ensures a bright future for everyone involved. So we did that, and I think, but I think the biggest shift, undoubtedly, as we do all this, and trust is a very big thing, and I think it is connected with the growth of community-based, you know, social media, collectives, whatever you want to call it, the where technology has enabled so much so easily, very quickly. You know, the last great big recession was the birth of invention, I guess, if you could say, you know, in the, at that time that Aviva, CGNU was coming together, and this big thing about the .com bust, you know, and then this kind of growth of these amazing kind of businesses that we still see around today, eBay and Amazon, Google. And people beginning to look at them and thinking how technology had enabled a different kind of business model there, you know, very different, and that perhaps people could do their own version of it for different things. And I think in the last 2 years, you know, there was all that excuse where you saw it with MySpace and Bebo particularly, that people almost were waiting, and then because MySpace, you know, the great acquisition by News International, was it $350 million or pounds, lots of money, whatever way you look at it, Bebo, similarly by AOL. And then, of course, they did kind of start to begin to wane, and people were going, oh, social media, it's this new kind of fad. So yesterday. So that's not, what's the next big thing? What's Web 2, Web 3 and all that? But then people, I think, really began to understand that out of that, there came these beasts that we now know, you know, Facebook, YouTube.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, there are, people can get very het up with, you know, next generation, Web 2, Web 3, and so on. And yet, I still think that of the fundamental things that they need to still sort out are still at the storytelling level. And so many companies actually, I think there is a huge gulf between what they currently, most people currently do, and where they could be in terms of, as you say, explaining what the company currently does, pulling together the strategy in a coherent place, in a coherent way, so that instead of just having little pockets, if indeed they do have the different parts of content around the site, actually bringing it together and telling that story.
I think you're absolutely right, because at the end of the day, the technology is just the enabler, you know, and you can make it easier, but actually it's like, what's the story you want to tell, and is it interesting enough? And I think, you know, in parallel, I think this is why the growth of corporate blogging is really connected with this, because it's easy. The technology is relatively easy, but it's about, are you just going to replicate what people can find elsewhere? So we're going to put the news releases through it, you know, and we've all been, and, you know, guilty of that. And we, you know, our Twitter feed on Aviva, which we set up in January last year, is now just, it just went through its 1,000th, you know, subscriber. And a lot of that is driven by just making accessible information that we carry through news release or RSS elsewhere. And we're beginning that, you know, this year we began that thing about exploring about how we could turn it from broadcast to dialogue, you know, traditional social media thing. But I think this is really about corporate blogging, because it's actually, what would you put in it that people would find interesting that they couldn't get elsewhere, and it's worth reading, you know?
Yeah, it's got to be worth reading.
And so then when you're in a company, it's about, you know, let alone, let's not forget this, you know, even though the tools make it easy, it's still resource time, thinking time, and it's not just, you know, it's got to be done
regularly.
And, you know, the fact that you've got to build an audience, and it might take a little time, you're not, it's not going to be success overnight. But fundamentally, I think it's why big companies struggle with this, is that they struggle to think what they would say that's not outside their normal communication channels through news releases or statements and stuff like that, or who they would trust to talk about that. So, you know, if you have a CEO who just says, I really want to do it, and as we've seen a number of these, and, you know, you kind of go, great, and then you kind of go, but what's the, you know, it's traditional communication things, back to that newspaper planning. So what have we got the issue this week that's going to make people want to buy this? And then what are we going to have next week that's going to want to make them buy it again? And I think that kind of content strategy is one of the big things that's now coming out for corporate websites, both in terms of destination, your .com, but also how you distribute content. And actually, I think, you know, I think one of the things that I would have been tackling at Aviva this year is with Aviva.com, even though we've got to a nice space, and I would have thought there was pieces that we could still do where we were weak. But fundamentally, we've got a big site. And I think this is the thing that's falling on a lot of people now, is actually a content strategy that helps elevate, not so much that you have to lose a lot of content, because in some respects, corporate websites, that's their job, archival, resource, the ability in an industry like insurance, where these analysts love writing 10-year trend reports, and I like to go and be able to find what we said, you know, in 2002 and all that business, and we can serve a great purpose and gain kudos and reputation for that by making it easy and findable and easy extractable from the site.
Yep.
But I think it's hoping a lot for some of these regular users to kind of, you know, alert them to, this is new over here. It's a little bit, could be, you know, you could argue it's like looking for a needle in a haystack. So I think
also what's most popular, or
absolutely.
Most downloaded.
So that social media device that, you know, see on many things is, you know, most popular, most shared, most emailed, that kind of thing. I think you'll see more of that in terms of helping users try to find stuff that people like them are also finding interesting. I think that's also, and we ran with some of this on Abibo, the ability to customise and personalise certain pages. Mm. So if you're in the investor centre and you were a retail shareholder and you really didn't want the hardcore institutional stuff, you could make the page work for you. And I think that's, I guess the jury would still be out on whether how useful that is.
I was going to say, honestly. Did you get much reaction?
Yeah, we got enough, but it didn't take off in massive numbers. But I've always thought about this and saying, you know, corporate websites, we're not like a million visits a month. You know, some might be or whatever. Mm. But within those audience groups, it's actually, if the people are using it, it's not so much the numbers, but actually who's in that group. The influencers in that who kind of go, no, I really don't take that away. I really find this useful, and I talk positively about this when I talk to other people. And that's why I like you as a company, because I think you do this really well. And so you kind of think about those powerful influencers in terms of, you know, perhaps low thousands of users rather than tens of thousands of users. And you think, well, actually, we've met their need, which is important, you know, in a kind of trying to be everything for everyone. There are key people that we still need to think about regularly.
But I think there's another point which people forget, which is that it's being seen to be doing something, which then has an influence on people's perceptions. So that if you are seen to provide, as you were saying before, every possible answer that someone might want to ask, then even though I don't read every single answer, I'm grateful that you've done it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a perception that you are open and transparent and helpful and wanting to answer and customer oriented, so wanting to answer my questions, and therefore, you know, even though I might not count in that number of people who go to and use the custom service, I certainly will take a positive message from it.
I think that's true, and I think this is where this content strategy and storytelling becomes really, really important, because elevating content of trying to help people to help them understand, you know, what you think is important to you to tell them about. I also think we've seen this shift, you know, it's connected with what I said earlier about just the people years ago, you know, you'd ask the, you know, a key set of analysts or the professional investment community, you know, what do you think of the report and accounts? And they go, I love all those tables. Yeah. Well, I'd never look at them. Don't read the review, don't read all that rubbish, you know, all that communications marketing stuff at the front. You might as well just send me all those tables in a Word document. I think in my experience in the last 10 years, you've seen a shift, and I don't know whether it's generational or whatever, but you see a new breed of people who come in actually, and I think this is fundamentally, for me, this is how going back to how I respond, is actually, so I'm interested in those numbers, and how they get made in terms of profit and loss and, you know, new business and activity within the business. But actually, what I'm really interested in is, surely that's the heart of that is, how do you run your business to make it a meaningful one for customers to buy from you, stay longer, and buy more? So that's when you need to really lift the bonnet on your operational stuff around activity in the business, new initiatives, the way you're trying to improve your service, your admin, the way you are coming up with customer-based initiatives to really connect for that, that will produce greater profits and benefit for all around. And I think there's a new generation of, and I remember once when we did one of these R&A surveys, you know, there was one young guy who just said to me in this rather, or said to the questioners in the group, in a rather plaintive voice about this, you know, the marketing communications aspect of the report and accounts and the branding and the identity, he said to me, or said to the group, you know, don't forget I'm human too. You know, I do look at things like that, because I'm beginning to look at the way you communicate in that, what you're saying, let alone just a kind of dedicated focus on numbers. I'm looking at that to help form judgments about you. And in similar way, when we before we relaunched Aviva.com in 2009, we did some user experience studio stuff with a company in a lab. And we had a fund manager came in, and it kind of, you know, he was asked, you know, how do you use corporate websites? And it kind of, you know, it's one of those things, you're sitting on the other side of the glass like the CID looking at it all, and you're going, oh no, this is not going to stop. Because immediately he said, oh, I never use them. I don't use them much. And you go like that. But then he said the Holy Grail, which is, he's, but I absolutely insist all my team use them in their research decisions. So he said, my team, that's their job. I used to do it, but I, you know, we pore over sites like this and like these because that's where the information is, and we make judgments about how successful it is and whether we can get the information and things like that, which give us a barometer on what we think, how healthy the company is and the way the focus is on this in terms of a communication device. So that was kind of like, almost burying my head in my hand thinking, oh my God. that was the kind of thing of saying that, no, it's an absolutely essential to what we do in terms of judging companies. And I think increasingly, rather than dry kind of reporting, I think these people are more receptive to storytelling that actually conveys a similar message of actually why this produces a certain profit line or whatever. And they increasingly, I guess the other thing is, don't just want to read it. They want to be, I'm not sure if it's entertained, but they're more receptive to using the web and sites and technology in a way, almost like TV on their their desktop, laptop. So film, audio is going to be, you know, and it's already arrived in a minute. I think that's going to be, you know, that's what the web is there for, not just copy and paste, you know, written word, which we've all done. And in some respects, many of us, I guess, have done, and I'll hold our hand up at Aviva, we do it. You copy and paste it out of a thing that's purpose for somewhere else, and because you need to get it done, you don't really rewrite it for the web. And I think that's the next big thing around the content strategy, about repurposing that content for the medium it's really intentioned for. But I think a lot of that is going to be overtaken now about the different ways of communicating, you know, where increasingly people are saying, give me 500 words or a minute of film, what am I going to pick?
Oh,
500 words, I might not even get through 200 before my attention has been drawn elsewhere. A minute, and you might have a chance, particularly if you can do it well and you can give me three succinct, clear messages I can remember out of that.
That you do it well is key, though.
Yeah.
And this is where it's very easy for people to just assume, make a video, it'll all be great. If you get the right person doing it, if you look at the CEO videos on GSK,
yeah,
Andrew Witty, inspirational,
yeah,
shows thought leadership, the direction he is taking the company, and it's great from all different sort of angles, whether from a job hunter or a CSR analyst or an investor, it is uplifting,
yeah,
and it changes the nature of your interaction with the site. But if you have a bad video, then you can turn people off. And I guess the key thing is to know the difference and not just assume that just because you have filmed a senior executive saying something, that you've got a tick in the box.
And I think that's, you know, I think that for two things, that goes back to what we were talking about around content strategy. What do you want to say and how successful are you going to do it? Are you just going to be like, it's great, isn't it? This free-form blogging, you know, flip video stuff. We can just do it in the audience. Do it in the office, it looks really authentic, doesn't it? I've watched a number of those where that kind of, you think, yeah, there is an authenticity, homespun, connective quality about that, where I do think, yeah, they haven't spent fortune. That's the guy. I know he's the CEO. But I'm kind of going, it's not been thought out what the scripting of what he's saying here. And like the 500 words, after 23 seconds, I'm hitting the stop or pause button. And that's the other great thing, or difficulty in web video on the web, is that if you do these head-to-head things, you invite people, you don't really need to look often at what they're saying, as opposed to listen. And you invite people to scour around content around the page that is sat on often, and suddenly they're going and their mind is wandering and they've gone, this is not really holding my attention, and then they go, oh, what's this over here? Yeah. And away they go. And I mean that kind of diversion, you know, the distractive quality of the web, that thing, we've all done it where we've gone out to search for something in Google and into somewhere else and go, how did I get here? because we get taken down these paths, you know, in terms of, particularly if you've got a curious nature, you kind of find yourself going down them sometimes. And I think it's really, really true. And so, but that's not to say, you know, and it's quite interesting with Cisco killing the flip, you know, in terms of one of these things that really heralded this in. And but obviously now you can see, because you can buy major SLRs now from Canon, Nikon, you know, that do your stills and then will do a nice bit of quality HD video as well, the old bundled in. That's the way of the world. But with flip, you know, it's actually high quality stuff. You could do it. It is really cheap. But fundamentally, you need to light it properly and you need to think about what you're saying in it, because it won't, the technology won't make it meaningful.
It's the boys, not the toys.
Absolutely.